providing you with the tools, knowledge, skills, and power to advance your career, grow your business, and build a better future for your community. We are the Tourism Academy. Welcome to Business Class. Jeff Kolath, Executive Director of the Stax Museum of American Soul Music, joins me to talk about sharing his love for music, history, and storytelling in a career that blends all three in a place that you can visit yourself, right there in Memphis, Tennessee. This episode, Jeff Kolath.
Hello there, Steve Ekstrom, host of Business Class, the TourismAcademy.org podcast, where I get to talk with people who are making a difference while also making their living in the tourism industry. Our next guest, Jeff Kolath from the Stax Museum of American Soul Music, has been on my radar for a while. Jeff, I'd like to welcome you here to Business Class.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
The reason that you've been on my radar is that your organization straddles a few different industries. Mm-hmm. Do you mind sharing a little bit about the different parts of the organization and how it works?
The overall organization is the Soul Soul Foundation, and we've been around since 1999, founded at the location of the original Stax Records on the corner of College and Macklemore in Memphis, Tennessee, about 3 miles from Beale Street, which most everybody seems to, there, Graceland are the two points that people seem to know about Memphis. And we have three parts to our organization, the Stax Museum, which shares the story of Stax Records and American soul music in general. It's been around since 2003. The Stax Music Academy, which is an after-school music program sort of steeped in the music and the lore and sort of the legend of Stax Records of grades 6 through 12, but also it has a really strong youth development component too. And then the Soulsville Charter School, which is a public charter school, grades 6 through 12, that serves about 650 students. The school and the academy both have just incredible academic records. The students have gone on to really to do wonderful things in Memphis and beyond Memphis, working in federal government, working in politics, working in the hard sciences, but obviously music and the arts too. And some of them have stayed in Memphis and been able to make a career, and others have gone on to do some really great things and throughout the world, actually performing. And now we have a really strong sort of technical component to our curriculum in the Stax Music Academy. So young men and women who want to be involved in music and the arts, but maybe not perform it like me, choose to learn how to mix live sound and record and that sort of thing, and do the tech side of things, do podcasts and record video and edit video. And so they do all kinds of great things, and it's really been a great organization. We've made a really big difference in our communities.
You're not interested in playing music, but do you play an instrument?
No, I don't play anything. I consume it and I talk about it, think about it, but I don't play anything. Never have.
How did you end up in your position as the executive director?
Sure. I have a public history background. I have my master's in public history from Indiana University, Purdue University, Indianapolis, or UIPUI. and then I've really worked in museums or historical societies, doing anything and everything from education to public programming, exhibitions, some curation, some collections work. And really, this job is sort of a perfect mix of my professional interests in public history side of things, but then also on my academic interests. I wrote my master's thesis on soul music and civil rights in Indianapolis in the 1960s and 70s. And so Stax, when the opportunity came about, the old-fashioned way, apply for a job and they call you for an interview and then they call you back for a second one and so on. So it's been a really remarkable opportunity, and been here a little over 6 years now. And Memphis is a really interesting place. And being able to talk, share the Stax story and meet so many of the musicians and the people that worked for the company, and then just, Memphians in general, it's just been really cool. And work is still work, but work is fun. So that's okay.
Should I tell people why we had to bump our meeting back just a little bit today?
Yeah, no, it's fine. I mean, I do a little bit of everything at the Stax Museum of American Soul Music. And today we're getting new flooring. So I had to clean out my office and move stuff. And I came home to clean up because we have an event tonight. Our first in-person event since COVID is tonight. So I wanted to clean up and and smell good for our guests.
The message that I got was dirty and bloody.
Yes, true. Both of those things were true.
Well, I'm glad you showered for me. That's really kind and special of you, even through Zoom. What got you so interested in history and museums and music?
I mean, I've always been interested in history since I was really young and was always really good at it because I was incredible at knowledge retention. And so when they say history is not more than just names and dates, well, that's true. But in middle school, it's really not. But I had really good teachers. I had excellent high school teachers that did both world and U.S. history. And I'm from Wisconsin originally, so Wisconsin history. And then was lucky enough to have some really great teachers where I went to undergrad at UW, University of Wisconsin La Crosse. And really there was, I took a history of the Vietnam War class. And, you know, the teachers were great and we read and, you know, I was interested in the subject matter and we watched movies and, you know, Apocalypse Now and the whole thing. And like, just the freedom to interpret, to use film and music to understand the Vietnam War and understand that experience was really cool. And really just sort of, you know, it was new to me at that time. But they brought in multiple panels of veterans that not only served on the American side, but also that served in the South Vietnamese Army, too, who had come to the United States after the fall of South Vietnam in 1975. And it was sort of, that's when, like, the light bulb really went on. It was like, okay, this is the stories of individuals specifically and collecting those stories. So I got really into oral history, did some oral history projects for undergrad, did oral history projects in graduate school, used oral history extensively for my master's thesis. And so I really just became interested in telling the stories of people that doing good local history, but also really good history in telling stories about people that don't get told all the time. And so my first professional experience was working at a military history museum, the Wisconsin Veterans Museum, where I worked extensively with Vietnam veterans and their families and veterans from current conflict all the way back to World War II, being able to tell those stories and bring them to, you know, a wider audience was really important, but then also to use music and culture, cultural history is a really important part of what it is that we were doing too. So I guess that's why, and it's just sort of now I get to do music every day. So now it's trying to bring in some of the other stuff, but it's really just, it's so open-ended and, you know, there's good history and there's bad history. There's good interpretation and there's bad interpretation and there are wrong answers. But at the same time, there's also a lot of freedom within that to make your case. And if the sources point you in one direction, you know, you follow the sources.
One of the things you mentioned was storytelling. Mm-hmm. And storytelling is a common theme throughout tourism.
Yeah.
And when I worked at a museum, one of my favorite things to do was to ask the folks who'd been around for a long time what their favorite stories were that people probably wouldn't have suspected when they first walked in. Mm-hmm. What's a story that you've learned about Stax that you think went untold for too long or is just so compelling that it gets people's attention?
It's hard to pick just one, but I think the one that I've told a lot, but also have developed a personal relationship with this person, and he's now since passed, sadly. The song Walk On by Isaac Hayes on his 1968 record, or 69 record, Hot Buttered Soul, which is a cover version of a Burt Bacharach song, and Dionne Warwick did the original. But there's this really intense distorted guitar part in that song, and it's uncredited on the album. And so when I went to Stax, I didn't know who played that. And in talking to people and learning more about the record, came across this idea that it's this guy named Harold Bean. And so I met Harold in like 2017, maybe. And it's 17 or 18. And was sort of like, well, you're the guy that played that riff. And he's like, yeah, and I didn't know what else really he had done. And then come to find out he had played with Eddie Floyd and he played with Funkadelic later. And so just developed this friendship with him. But again, it's all in this ideas of wanting to tell his story because I wanted people to know who he was. We wanted people to know who he was. And so he, you know, talked to him on the phone and saw him at a couple of events and finally, you know, said, you know, we'd really, what do you have photos? Do you have artifacts? He's like, oh, I got some things. I'll bring some stuff by to see him. And so he brings in these photos and he's got just these amazing photos of, him playing with Isaac Hayes out on the road. He was a member of Isaac's second touring band. Him playing with Funkadelic live, his Funkadelic stage costume, which he wore for a couple of years, and then he quit music to go work at National Cash Register in Atlanta. And so all this stuff, and he keeps telling me these stories. And you know, he showed me some pictures, and I asked him if he still had the guitar that he played on Hot Buttered Soul, and he didn't, but he had another photo of himself playing with Eddie Floyd. And I said, well, where's that guitar? He's like, oh, I got it at home. It's like, well, we love that guitar. So the next time he came in, he brought us the guitar and he brought us some of that other stuff. And then he brought in these 8mm films of concerts he recorded in Atlanta when he was living there. And it just got to this point where, you know, finally we got the opportunity to put together a case and put out his guitar along with some other materials. And then we were able to honor him in late 2019, and he had some really serious health problems and had a leg amputated and was having heart trouble and such. But like, he came and his son brought him and he played the riff from Walk On By with a great band of local musicians. And then he played the riff from played Maggot Brain, which he used to play with Funkadelic all the time. And it was amazing to watch the other musicians see him play those songs, like the looks on their faces. But then also the fulfillment that Harold had, because I think he probably knew it was the last time that he was going to be able to do that. And it was, sadly it was. That was in September of 2019, and he passed away in February of 2020. So kind of coming full circle, it's, you know, when in this business, we get the opportunity to bring in artifacts a lot, but we never make any promises. So we say we never make promises that we'll put stuff out on display. Sometimes you do because the piece is so amazing that you absolutely know you'll put it out. But everything that we've been able to do with Harold is, even though he's no longer with us, we're now telling his story now in two different places in the museum, because I just put out his Funkadelic costume last week with some other materials too. So now we're able to tell his story in two different places, in a place where he was, grew up down the street, went to Hamilton High School, worked in the Satellite Record Shop, in the original building. But he was just one of these guys that was really unheralded, and no pun intended. And now we're able to, you know, share his story. So that's one that's, you know, whatever happens in my career, that's something I'm always going to remember.
A quick reminder about the Tourism Academy, offering online, on-demand, and live in-person training so that you can create stakeholder alignment, demonstrate the relevance of tourism to your community, empower local businesses, and improve the local tourism experience so you can have more positive social mentions, longer stays, and more repeat high-volume visitors. Build a culture of inclusion while saving time and money with online tourism ambassador training and certification by the Tourism Academy, tourismacademy.org.
How do you balance the role that you have with regards to an after-school program, a charter school, and a museum? How do you find that balance? You know, there aren't many people. I mean, are there others that have all three?
No. I mean, we're the only, we are a unicorn in so many ways, and we have incredible leadership, you know, throughout our campus. Dr. Nishanta Brown, the head of the school, Pat Mitchell Worley is our head of the Stax Music Academy, and then our CEO, Richard Greenwald, are all tremendous. But they're so committed to our mission, so committed to what we do, so committed to telling the story and making the story relevant and then still maintaining its impact. And so it requires a lot of plates to be spun at all times. And we're sharing a campus, which means we share a parking lot, which means we share space. As one thing grows, you know,
what one building, one part of the organization grows, and then they squeeze into another part of the building. Well, something has to come out the other side, and so we're just, you know, we're overtaxed in terms of space right now, and we are. It's incredible what we're able to accomplish with the relatively small staff that the museum and the Music Academy have, and the Charter School has a really outstanding group of educators and support staff too. So I think everybody kind of knows their role, and I think for the museum, you know, its original role was to be the economic engine, which was to help bring in tourists to Memphis, capture those dollars, and then to use those proceeds to fund other activities on campus, like the Stax Music Academy. The museum, though, has grown to be so much more than that. You know, we really see ourselves as Memphis's community music museum. We do, you know, before COVID, we're doing 30 free nights of programming. We're, you know, welcoming with open arms and open doors school kids from Shelby County Schools and Memphis City Schools. We do a lot of public outreach. We try to collaborate as much as we can, although it's difficult given, you know, mm-hmm. what we do and what everybody else does and the time that we have. But I think that's really the thing, is that we all kind of have a group that we individually serve, and our constituencies are so different, ours being, you know, 60,000 or so guests from all over the world, whereas the Music Academy and the Charter School are very much Memphis focused in what it is they do.
What would be your favorite spot in the attraction, in the museum, to just sit in public and people watch?
Well, the Isaac Hayes' 1972 Cadillac Eldorado custom peacock blue 24 karat gold plated trim is sort of our showpiece. My favorite place, because it's the place where I probably had the most meaningful conversations, is in the Hall of Records, where we have pretty much the entire recorded output of Stax and its associated labels between 1957 and 1975, floor to ceiling cases for the LPs. And then we have all the LPs, and we're about 10 or 12 short on the 45s right now. Just got one more in yesterday. So, but I like catching people in there because they're pointing at records and they're saying, I had that, or I had that, or don't you remember that? And so it's fun to just say, what are you looking at? And sometimes it'll be like, oh, I'm just looking at, or, oh yeah, just looking at these Isaac Hayes records. I used to have those. Or sometimes somebody will just, it'll be like, it's clear that nobody's asked them. It's like, well, why, you know, what are you looking at? It's like, oh, I'm looking at this Albert King record. Oh yeah, you're a big fan of Albert King. Oh my. And it's like, nobody's ever asked them about their Albert King fandom before. But I always learned something. You know, I talked to one guy one time, and he told me all about this crazy music festival that they did in the middle of the Ohio River in 1969 or 70, and descended into just chaos and anarchy because they overcharged people with water, and then they had to take a ferry to get across, and they were undersupplied. And when the supply truck rolled up, they like raided the supply truck, and took the supplies, and then burned the truck. And it was this whole thing, but I had no idea that actually happened. And it did. And so there's that. And then just, you know, we get a lot of, you know, we haven't had lately, hopefully we'll come back soon, Northern European tourists who are really into the Stax and always have been, and really kept Stax alive for many years while it kind of interest faded here in the States. And they have just such fond memories of the 1967 European tour. So it's always fun to talk to folks who were who saw those shows, but also their just knowledge of this music is so incredible. So I'll be like, hey, what are you looking at? Oh, I'm just looking at this Paul Thompson single. Nobody knows who Paul Thompson is. Nobody. It's an amazing single, but nobody knows who he is. And so admit it was like a British guy that told me about this record. I didn't know anything about it. So I love learning from guests, you know, I love learning from guests but you know, as always, when you talk to guests, they like to tell you when you do stuff wrong or whatever. And it's like, yes, I know that typo has been there since 2003, you know,
it's part of our history now.
Part of our history. Anyways,
you mentioned having had some great teachers.
Mm-hmm.
Who's made the most impact on your approach to running a museum?
Oh, wow. That's deep.
I'm not going to get specific or anything, but
yeah, really. You know, that's a good question. And I think it's, you always go back to your formative years in the field. And I've had really good bosses. And I really think that it was my coworker at the Wisconsin Veterans Museum, this guy named Bill Brewster, who now works at the Harley-Davidson Museum in Milwaukee and was at the First Division Museum at Cantini in Wheaton, Illinois before that. Bill was the one that really taught me how to tell stories, how to work with veterans and their families, how to, you know, find your way to do this. Because talking about military history and talking about experiences like war is not easy. Talking to families whose loved ones may have been killed in combat or conflict or have just passed is not easy. But talking about bad memories is not easy. But finding a way to do that, and Bill was such an expert at the material culture of the war that he could just, and just the content, that he could just start a conversation literally anywhere. And he's so genuine in his care for these people, and you know, would sit with them and talk to them and listen to them, and like showed me the patience that's needed to do that. But also showed me that I need to, you know, I can't be him. And this is what I tell everybody at work. You can't be me. Like, you can't tell this. You can tell a story that I tell, but you're not going to be able to tell it like I tell it, because I say it. I tell different stories all the time, or just, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. But it's like, how do you approach it? What's your angle? What's your hook? And for him, it was just this incredible knowledge for me about military history, which I knew I would never have. My hook was always music. And so my hook would be, if I was talking to somebody that served in Vietnam, you know, my first question would be something like, did you have a favorite song when you were over there? And then go from there. Or if we're looking at photos, you know, look for photos where they're smiling. Tell me about that photo. Tell me about a happy memory. Or, you know, even something as simple as, what kind of beer did you have over there? Because everybody had different kind of beer. There wasn't one kind of beer in Vietnam. Every kind of beer, every domestic macaroon lager you can think of was in Vietnam. But that was, so that was something that was really helpful to me. And that's what I still do today. You know, it's just really, now it's my knowledge of the subject matter, which helps me. Mm-hmm. But also learning that not everybody is going to remember everything. Memory is a tricky thing, and personal conflicts and, you know, bad memories are a thing too. So just being, you know, mature enough and careful enough to avoid the landmines.
So what advice would you have for somebody who's getting started, maybe even on the ground level, like a tour guide or something, who has to develop their storytelling skill?
I mean, the two things would be, what is the story? What is the mission of your organization? And what is the story that they are telling? Learn that forwards, backwards, hold it up like it's, you know, this is the thing that you live and die by. And then find what you love and find what you are, what you know, and what you can contribute to that story to emphasize those main points. I think that to me is that way you everybody is singing from the same book. But, you know, you're able to sing a little, maybe you're an alto, the other one's a soprano, and somebody else is a bass. You're all singing the same song, but mm-hmm. everybody just does it a little bit differently. And I think that's really important because, again, you know, that's one of the struggles, I think, with being a tour guide, is that you never want to be like, here's your script, learn it. In some places I like that. I'm not like that. I never have been. I don't like that personally, but I also totally understand the need for it. My wife, you know, led tours and worked with tour guides for years. So, and she was very much of, here's the script. This is what you need to tell, but work your personal narrative into it, because this is what people want to hear. They want to hear your story too. And then it was always, well, you went too far. I got to reel you back in, you know, which is always easy to deal with, you know, 75-year-old, you know, Korean War veterans who are giving tours anyway. But I think that's a good way to do it is really just know why you're there, know the organization, know their story, know their mission, and then how best can you emphasize that through, you know, your personal interests too.
What would you like to see happen within your organization the next 5 to 10 years?
Space. We all have the space we need to do the job that we all want to do. For the museum, it's to serve more guests, it's to do more programming, it's to boost our educational tours, it's to increase our collection storage, to acquire more artifacts and then to share those. For the Music Academy, it's to have, you know, performance space and permanent office space for their staff so they don't have to share classrooms with the charter school. For the charter school, it's, you know, the ability to potentially open up a, you know, maybe do a K-5. I don't know, I might be speaking out of turn on that one, but at least have, you know, where they're, yeah, every teacher is able to have their own classroom, they're not using portables, and the students have all the resources that they need. In 2003, when this thing started, I don't think they never imagined we would be doing what we're doing. And I mean, it's true. I think we've taken what our founders did and have done, I would maybe not everything, but probably 90 to 95% of everything they hoped we would do. Mm-hmm. But in some areas we've done, you know, 1,000% more than what we were, have been expected to do, especially with regards to youth education. And also, I think honestly, just our ability to be a community museum, community minded museum like we are.
Do you think most museums are as integrated with their communities as yours is? And if so, why? If not, what should they be doing?
I think most museums are doing really well. I think the pandemic has probably made many museums better in some ways. They've forged new connections. Museums have a role in their community, and every museum's role is a little bit different. Some is just to be a local history museum and tell the story of a community or tell the story of a people. Some of them are open full-time, some of them are open part-time, some have millions of guests, some have 5,000, you know, whatever it might be. But I do think that it's, if you're not serving a constituency, if you're not serving a community, if you're not making your work accessible, then you're not doing something wrong. If you're not piquing people's interest, you're not piquing their curiosity, if you're not making them say, wow, I didn't know that, or wow, that's cool. I think that's the main thing, is it's just the public facing part of this business is so critical right now. It's more than it ever has been. There's so many opportunities to teach and to share, but also I think for us to learn from our communities too, and which increases our ability to tell more stories as well.
As you were talking about museums and their relevance and sort of capturing the attention of their guests, mm-hmm. Something was running through my mind, and that is people who work in travel and tourism, people who work for museums and people who travel tend to have something in common, and that is that they're lifelong learners. Mm-hmm. What's something you'd like to learn?
Man.
Pokemon.
I don't know. I think when I go to museums, I always look at artifacts. I look at stuff. I love stuff. And so if a museum has great stuff, I will like the museum, generally speaking. And so I think I know enough already.
I know it all. There's nothing left for me to learn today.
I wish I had something profound to say, but I think it's wherever I go, wherever I visit, is just really trying to learn what the people in that community care about, you know, and just understanding where they're coming from on something. And I think museums have the ability to help with that and reflect that.
I think that relates not just to the museum world, but I think maybe even personally.
Yes.
And understanding what people care about. I'm going to wrap up with two questions because I know we're running short on time. One, is there anything I didn't ask that you wish I did?
No, you asked really good questions.
Thanks. I've been working on them since third grade.
Those are deep.
Good. And then the last is a question card. Mm-hmm. Pick a number 1 to 10.
7.
Seventh card in the deck. If you live to the age of 90, would you rather retain the mind or body of a 30-year-old for the last 80 years of your life?
Mind.
The mind of a 30-year-old.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good question. If folks want to learn more about the Stax Museum and the work that the foundation does, how would they find you?
Staxmuseum.com, SoulsvilleFoundation.org is our main site. And then, of course, all on the socials, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Instagram tends to be more of like the fun stuff that we do inside the museum and random pictures of artifacts and records and things. Facebook is where you can find the most out about our events and Stax history and sort of American soul music writ large. And the website's got all kinds of information about coming to see us, booking a tour, buying online tickets, and then also you can visit staxarchives.com, which is just sort of a cool website to look at a bunch of stuff from our archival collections, posters and newsletters and photographs and promotional posters and random things. So
I wrote down a couple of those songs that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
If there were a song that we can find online and add a little under track to this, what would you say?
Walk On by Isaac Hayes. It's the end all be all Stax song for me. So.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you joining me here in Business Class. For anybody that's interested in the Tourism Academy, you can visit us at tourismacademy.org. And thank you, Jeff. I appreciate you.
Thank you. I appreciate this as well. Thanks for delaying a half hour for me.
Don't worry. You're not bloody and bruised and dirty now. So okay. It worked out.
Thanks so much.
Take a course. Train your people. Teach what you love. Promote your products. Donate today at tourismacademy.org, a 501c3 nonprofit organization.